Big finish from Sandy Patty, More Than Wonderful. And prior to that, Phillips, Craig, and Dean sang for us. 10.5 minutes after the hour on a Monday on the Broken Road. And joining us from Garden Valley, Texas, is Dr. Don Clark. Don, good morning to you. Happy Monday. Oh, wait a minute. We lost your mic. Lost your audio. Can't hear you. What's going on there? Had you just a minute ago. Oh, I know. It was my fault.
Hello.
My fault. My fault. I did it. I'd lost a button. So we're back in business now. Nice big
okay,
introduction.
Am I on?
No, you're on. You're definitely on today. Yeah. Don Clark, a biochemist, a member of the board of Creation Moments, and a good friend of the station, joins us every Monday morning. And we usually talk about science versus faith and creation versus evolution and really anything scientific. And Don, you bring us news this morning of a new find over in Dmanisi, Georgia, which is the Soviet Georgia, not the U.S. Georgia. And some old skulls have been found there. Tell us about those.
Well, actually, several skulls were found, but one in particular they identified as, they numbered as Skull 5. And it was different than the other skulls in that it had a smaller brain cavity, but it had a kind of a larger jaw and a longer face to it. And so the researchers who were doing the study kind of suggested, well, we've got all this variation, especially in this one spot. And they also found some stone tools in the area. So it looked like they were miners of some sort. So they said, we have all these variations. Perhaps we should rethink all the Homo species. That maybe they aren't all separate species, but maybe they're just one species after all.
Mm-hmm. Now, is that a logical conclusion? I mean, you can acknowledge that as maybe a possibility, but what if they just all hung out together, this variety of species? Wouldn't the results been the same, five different skulls from five different groups of people that just happened to coexist? Or is the scientific thinking that one evolved from the last, and they should be eons apart?
Well, if that was the thinking before this discovery, because they had never found this variety of skulls in one location before, so if you've got these different looking people or hominoids, if you will, in a large dispersed area, and then you find you have a find like this, it kind of suggests that, well, probably they were a family group of some sort, or at least a community that were living and working together at the time that they got buried.
Now, how do they determine the age on these? They're so old, regular carpet dating won't work.
Well, that's right. They're dating them at 1.5 or 1.8 million years old, and it's the old dating problem. Either you're looking at the strata in which these bones were found, or you're dating some rock, near the area, and you're saying, okay, well, this has to be this old. But they're probably there was no evidence, no indication in the article, at least, that they were actually sent out any samples for radioisotope dating. So it's probable that they are dating these finds, these skulls, by just looking at the layer of dirt that they're in.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the strata. Science lays out certain procedures, certain operating principles, really predetermined certain assumptions in order to help them reach conclusions. But how often are these assumptions, these basic assumptions, looked at, reevaluated? Because that seems to be what's at question here, is the old way of determining how one species is related to another. The fact that they found five different species at the apparently different species at the same level indicates that, well, just that very assumption is wrong, that they were different species. I mean, this calls into question the system by which they build to their conclusions.
Well, that's right. It certainly does, and this is actually, if you look at this, and they made another statement in the article in that the variation that they see at this site and the variation in the hominoid skulls is the same variation in, let's say, skull, you know, shape that we see today in modern humans. So that, in that interesting statement, was made by creationists back in the 70s.
Hmm.
So they're a little behind the times, and but I'm glad to see that they're actually making a statement like that and coming to the conclusion that, well, maybe all these hominoids that we've found, all these human human-looking skulls that we found are actually human.
Now, how do they determine the species? Now, there's something about brain cavity size and face size and that sort of thing. What is that criterion? Explain that to us a little bit.
Well, they I'm not a archaeologist, obviously, but they they're measuring obviously the brain cavity size. They're looking at the furrows of the brow and the jaw position and jaw bones, and they're trying to compare that with either chimpanzees or monkeys of some sort or humans, and these are all definitely human in origin, and so they're assigning them to the genus Homo, and that's what they were doing, you know, prior to this time as well. But they thought that, well, there's so much variation in these type of skulls in the finds before that they just decided to assign them to different species. So you had Homo erectus, for example, and other subspecies of the genus Homo. And so that's why they're, I mean, that's basically just from a phenotype of what they're finding, what the skulls look like and their brain cavity size and those type of things.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a mystery to me. It just seems to me that the decisions, the method for making those decisions are based more on tradition and kind of a consensus for how these things should be rather than on logic. Now, if there are other scientists that agree with these findings, that, hey, now we have to recompute, they have to go back to square one, don't they? Really build a new system for determining how to define a species.
Well, and not only that, we've talked about this before, how your worldview influences, especially in science like this, the conclusions that you come to. Because if your worldview is, well, man is evolved, then you are looking for skulls and you are looking for examples of, you know, where did man come from? What are the predecessors to modern man, for example? And so with that in mind, anytime they saw a skull that looked a little more primitive than modern man, then they called it, oh, well, this must have been, you know, an ancestor of modern man, and gave it a new name, mm-hmm. as opposed to saying, well, no, this is just ordinary variation within the human within the humankind, and being honest about it, because that you can certainly look around and see, well, there are some folks that have a more furrowed brow than others, there is a wide, you know, variation in what we all look like, and that's good. That's how God created us. But to go off and say, gee, we've actually have evidence now to prove evolution, the evolution of man, and then have a discovery like this, or at least an admittance like this, that, hey, well, you know, maybe these are all belonging to the Homo sapien species after all, is, I think, at least someone is admitting that, well, you know, maybe we're wrong, and but it all boils down to what your worldview is and how do you interpret the world around you.
Yeah, Dave, we're getting a lot of volume off your mic again. If you can just
Stop breathing?
No. Because we have this annoying thing that happens when David is quiet for a long period. Like the volume goes up on his system. I can't understand that, but that's what's going on.
Well, it happens so rarely that I'm quiet for a long period
true.
Of time.
That's true.
I'm looking at it. Let me butt in for a second. Yeah. I got some things to fill in the gap for the conversation. I'm looking on the Smithsonian page, and under the question, what does it mean to be human? And, you know, and it has the Ardipithecus group and earliest humans that they were the first ones that took steps to walk upright. And there's the Australopithecus group, and there's four or five different findings. And they had they walked upright as well, but they still climbed trees, so a kind of a combination of both. And then there's a group a little further up the tree called the Paranthropus group. And they had very large teeth and powerful jaws, but they walked upright as well. And then we get to the Homo group, where they walked upright all the time. You know, they were full-time upright walkers. And it says they had large brains and used tools. But all of these groups, individuals within the group, had tools and had large brains. So even back when I was an anthropology undergrad, back in the ancient times, back when we didn't know all that much, it never was clear to me that there were specific earmarked exact differences between the third guy in the left and the 14th guy in the right. And there didn't seem to be, to my eye, a progression or a difference between that suggested that if you started with the guy on the left and he was the most simple-minded, at the beginning of the tree, that somehow there was a change over time that suggested that there was something going on here from generation to generation to generation.
You know, you mentioned the tree. That whole tree is an assumption.
Yes,
I mean, absolutely. That's some graphic designer's idea of how to organize the information so that we can make decisions based upon what we see in the future. You know, if we find a new one, we'll have to find a place on the tree for him. When maybe belongs on a different tree entirely, or no tree at all.
There's no tree at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the thing that kept puzzling me back in when I was sitting in this guy's anthropology class. Is that I don't know that I see a tree. I don't know that I see a change from your first guy to your last guy that suggests that there's some sort of an evolving going on there. Mm-hmm. And if you look around in the classroom, you see just as much variation within the classroom that you're sitting in than you do on the screen of the skulls that were found. And you know, and these are only the skulls that were found. There's probably a bunch of them out there that haven't been found.
Mm.
That would maybe suggest the same kind of thing, that there is no tree.
Well, and that's what they're saying here, mm-hmm. that has all broken down.
mm-hmm.
I'm going to make a couple of other points. One is that our bones, as we get older, our bones aren't elongating anymore, but the edges, if you will, of our bones are still growing. And so the older that you get, the more furrowed brow, for example, that you would get, and it would begin to, you know, it's obviously people could recognize who you are, but it begins to change you, and your skull, if you would, it becomes more ape-like, if you, I mean, put it in this anthropology, you know, terms. So some of these bones that they've found could have been our patriarchs before the flood, because if they lived to be 900, and I believe that they did, because you know I believe what Scripture writes about them, if they lived to be over 900 years old, then that's exactly what you would expect to find. Is if you dig long and hard enough, then you would find bones of that description. And so I think in this, you know, in this area of anthropology, they do take a great deal of liberty, and either the bones that have been found or ascribed to that have been ascribed to humans turn out to be monkeys, or there actually are humans, and it's just the variation within the humankind, for example, that we're seeing. And many of the bones could be pre-flood, and actually could have been preserved in the chaos of the flood. And that's why you find a certain group. Either, like, for example, there's a movie out called Pompeii, and we know all what happened at Pompeii, but the catastrophe at Pompeii, and obviously that was post-flood, but a catastrophe can certainly trap, if you will, you get a picture of what people and animals were at the time of that catastrophe because they get buried in mud.
Now, science, it seems, reacts poorly when there's a surprise, when you'd think just the opposite. You'd think scientists would be delighted to find something that turns the scientific community on its ear, but it doesn't work that way, does it?
No, it doesn't. When you find something like this, you're not going to find this in your mainstream newspaper headlines, for example, or even in the headline science section of your newspaper. You're not going to find it in the Smithsonian magazine or anything, National Geographic or whatever, because that disrupts their what they have been proclaiming, for years and years and years. So we're living in interesting times because we do have internet, and these type of stories you can run across on the internet. Most people may not be aware of these type of findings unless you happen to come across it over the internet. So it is disturbing that why can't folks just be honest about it, and let's just have a good clean discussion about these findings and the possible implications coming from the two different worldviews. One, of course, is the evolutionary worldview, and the other one is the creation worldview, and see if we can't come to some agreement on the data that we're seeing.
This article we're talking about is Mail Online. It's over at dailymail.co.uk, so it's a British website. We will post a link to this article on our podcast of the conversation here with Dr. Donald later this morning. But down at the end of the article, there's a comment section. And again, this is so predictable how discussion gets so heated on these things. Both sides, creationists and evolutionists, defending their positions with such passion and such even anger and simply outright abuse of the other side. This really strikes a nerve with a lot of people. What happened to civil discussion here, Don?
Well, that's the problem. I mean, it's okay to be passionate, but it's not okay to be ugly. Mm. And we really need to respect one another in our conversations, and don't go to calling each other's names, because that doesn't get you anywhere, and it certainly doesn't put your point across. Mm. It certainly shows that you're extremely biased. And like I said, honest discussions would be great. But unfortunately, even on the creation side, some people are so passionate about it that they try to force their view on everyone. Our Lord Jesus Christ basically came to testify of the truth, and in the truth that our Father in heaven loves us more than we could ever possibly imagine. And, Jesus didn't get into these type of arguments. One might argue, well, okay, with the scribes and Pharisees, there was a little bit of a tussle, but he didn't get into an argument with them. He just told them, how they were behaving and that they were following their father, Satan. Now, that could be inflammatory, but it was nothing like what we're seeing in these type of discussions.
Well, the headline on the article, "Does This Skull Rewrite the History of Mankind? 1.8 million-year-old remains suggest all human ancestors belong to the same species, just looked different." And there'll be a link for you to follow up on this if you'd like to later on in the day as we post the podcast. We'll do it that way. That's the right procedure. Don, a member of the Board of Creation Moments and a biochemist, we're so pleased to have you with us and look forward to each Monday. We learn something from you just about every week.
Are we done?
You can certainly.
Let me just make one more comment, and
sure.
It's not a book that I wrote, but it's a promotion for a book since it is on this subject. The title of the book is Bones of Contention: A Creationist Assessment of the Human Fossils, and so it goes into these type of discussions that we've had today in quite detail. It's by Marvin Libenow, and you can, of course, find it in probably Amazon or on Creation Moments' website if you would like to get a copy of it. But it very much is on point for the discussion that we actually had today. So, you know, here is a book that was written on the subject back in, 1992 was when the book was first published.
Spell the last name for me.
It's Lubinoff, Lubenow, Lubenow.
And Bones of Contention is the title of the book.
The thing that I wanted to continue on is partly what you and Jim were just talking about and the discussion which quickly becomes, but you're a moron and so what would you know? That's the level of the discussion that becomes that we quickly arrive at. And it's even the first comment on this particular one is more speculation. What does this guy expect? I mean, do you want to engage in the conversation or you just want to sit off the sidelines and throw some rocks? Well, you know, my nascent experience in politics, yeah, it seems like it gets to that point really, really fast. And in fact, many times it doesn't even get to that point of discussion about the differences or the problem at hand. I don't know how many times in certain groups among people that I used to know and hang out with, I'm discarded and ignored entirely because obviously Dave's a Republican now, so he can't have anything useful to say. So we're not going to talk to him at all. And that happens on the left as well. I guess I want to ask what will get us to the point where we can actually talk about subjects in polite society again, as opposed to just make our statements and then walk away in a huff and go back to our corner and say, never mind, I don't care what you have to say. I'm going to cover my ears and say la 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 la. Mm-hmm. We've gotten to that point in this culture now, and the books that I've just finished reading, Coming Apart and The Big Short, that we're moving to places where we think like, act like, do like things that we enjoy doing, and we live among those people and nobody else. We're self-sorting ourselves into little communes around the world and around the country, particularly around the country, but I understand it's a worldwide phenomenon as well. And we don't look at or talk to people we disagree with. We just hunker down with the folks that see things the way we do and pooey on the rest of us.
I wonder if more face-to-face interaction would be the thing, because people on blog sites and in comment sections to posted articles like this, if you don't see anybody, you tend to pontificate. You tend to throw your weight around and use big words, and you irritate people. And we've learned from emails too. You can make a big mistake with an email with an exclamation point or capital letters, and people don't see the real you in your emails typically. And the same happens to these blog comments. Maybe more face-to-face interaction is something that we're in danger of losing. And I think there's less and less of it all the time now, Don.
Yes, absolutely. And you lose the personal touch. You can't, they say that pretty much 80% of our communication comes from visual and body language. Well, obviously you don't have any visual and body language with a written text like that. Mm-hmm. So, uh, Yeah, it's unfortunate that we're moving, our society has moved into this type of thing. But at the same time, you know, people can hide behind the text and not have to really engage in intellectual discussions.
Mm-hmm. Well, with all this information floating around and the ease of access, it seems that somehow we're becoming more and more isolated. At least that's my opinion on the thing, and it's something to be concerned about, I think. And David, I think you hit the nail on the head, so to speak.
Yeah, and you know, just another thought popped into my semi-empty noggin, and that probably 30 or 40 years ago, I did a bunch of study and a bunch of classes and a bunch of reading on nonverbal communication. And, you know, in all of my communications textbooks and all of my early researchers would say nonverbal communication is the most believable, the most viable, the most potent. That's the part that speaks the loudest. We learn things about others nonverbally in the first 20 to 30 seconds. And if you've ever gone on a blind date, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You know immediately whether or not this is the love of your life or it's just going to be another boring dinner. Sometimes it doesn't take 20 seconds. Mm-hmm. But nobody understands this nonverbal communication idea, and we don't have that. We don't have that with other people anymore. You know, Carol was mentioning on the way back from church yesterday that you know, she said something offhand. She says, well, at least I go out and see people. I says, what do you mean by that? She says, well, one of us doesn't talk to anybody. And I says, well, yeah, I talk to Jim and Don every Monday morning. And, you know, I says, yeah, but you don't see anybody else. That's it. You know, and I said, well, you know, I go out in mystery shop and I talk to those people. I says, but you never see them again.
David, we just have to get you out of the house more often, I think.
And I said, yeah, and so? So even with the wife, I'm getting to the point, I'll go in my corners, yeah, and so what?
Yeah. I think maybe she's got something
But we've locked down the nonverbal communication between individuals. Mm-hmm. The neighbor guy and I have no idea. I mean, we like each other because our wives like each other. But we don't do the same things. Mm-hmm. But and there's something nonverbally we don't trust about each other. And you know, someday maybe we'll sit down over a handful of beers and discuss it. But I doubt it. I mean, there doesn't seem to be. But there's something that sets each of us off about the other one.
Mm-hmm. You know, it reminds me of life.
I prefer to think that it's tall because I'm tall and good looking. But you know,
but nobody knows, David. reminds me of my
radio program.
Reminds me of my days in Southern California and living in a suburban neighborhood where everybody built 6-foot fences around their backyards, so you couldn't see each other. Now it's not that you didn't like your neighbor necessarily, but you were desperate for some privacy. You wanted your own little island there, and so up go the fences, and that's where it keeps you in the dog, and it's very convenient. You don't have to confront people every day. You look out and you see fences. It's almost like we seek that as solace somehow or security. I'm not sure, but I think it's kind of a physical indication, an allegory for what we're doing online here, and we all have our computers and we build our little contact lists and websites that we frequent, and that's our new universe, and it's a little scary. I think we don't know how to react to real people when we meet them on the street.
Well, I wonder too sometimes, and I've had more thoughts this morning than I've had for weeks.
Mm-hmm. But don't hurt yourself.
This could, I mean, my head's that little vein is starting to throb again. Mm-hmm. And I had a reflection yesterday morning. I volunteered to help with the sound system, and the sound booth is upstairs in the old choir loft, and so I'm away from the rest of the congregation. And every once in a while, I reflect that I kind of miss being in amongst them, singing the songs and doing the praise and swaying back and forth and holding up my hands and all the rest of it. But that feeling passes quickly. And I said, yeah, but I get to sit up here and I don't have to talk to these people.
Oh my goodness! Yeah,
I mean, it wasn't that graphic, but it said yeah, it says, well, yeah, I mean, actually what I got to was, yeah, but this is where I'm needed.
Yeah.
I mean, I have certain skills that most of the rest of these people don't have.
Hmm.
I mean, the, you know, audiovisual stuff and controlling buttons and, and that sort of business. But,
okay.
But yeah, it was just one of those little reflections.
I think we should just simply resolve each of us to go out and say hi to somebody, a real person today.
Okay, I'll do it.
Start with that, yeah. Dr. Don Clark, again, with Creation Moments. And our only resident biochemist, we're so pleased that you make time for us every Monday, Don. Thanks very much. We'll look forward to next week, okay?
Okay, very good. And it's been a joy as usual.
Yeah, likewise. Good talking to you, Don.
Music from Phil Keaggy on a Broken Road Radio Monday morning.